mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, we've done it again, America's top micropolitan community for the 11th year in a row, and the Findlay formula keeps chugging along. Also this morning, barely 2 months past Christmas, and already we're getting a look at the hottest toys of 2025. We'll get the inside scoop from this week's American International Toy Fair. In case you missed it, this is Green Career Week. You might be surprised at the wide range of opportunities in the field of horticulture. And we have details on the latest happenings in the month of March at the Findlay YMCA. 70 Parsons will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. Aside from Fat Tuesday, the other big thing on the schedule today, the president's address to a joint session of Congress. That's what it's called on paper. But in practice, for all intents and purposes, it is a State of the Union address. They don't call it that when you're just a few weeks into the first term of a new president, or in this case, the new term of a new old president. So they don't call it a State of the Union address, but for all practical purposes, that is what it is. And President Trump teasing a big night tonight. Certainly will have no shortage of topics to talk about, given everything that has happened in the, 44 days or whatever it's been since his inauguration. One White House staffer referred to it as an America First victory lap that we will witness tonight in the president's speech to Congress. I cannot believe, and I looked this up because I figured that it had to be, but I couldn't find it anywhere. If you have found this or know where we can find it, please let me know, because I'd like to see. I can't believe that there aren't odds on the president's speech. I mean, we wager on everything in this country now. Why can't we wager on the president's speech? I mean, this is like, for political junkies, this is like the Super Bowl. And so why are there not odds on there? What is the over-under on the number of times the president talks about Doge, for example? I mean, there should be odds on this. But I couldn't find them. If they're out there, I couldn't find them. Another thing that I can't believe, I can't believe that no one has thought to suggest to the president that maybe they sell broadcast rights to this, because everybody is broadcasting the president's speech. It's going to be on all of the networks, all of the broadcast networks, the cable news channels. There's going to be everything on C-SPAN. Everybody is broadcasting this. So maybe they should sell broadcast rights. Maybe you could make some money on this. Maybe even sell commercial time. Maybe during the moments where the president gets applause, they could do a picture in a picture with a brief commercial. or do a little commercial bug, you know, in the corner and sell ad time on this. I'm just saying, you want to make money for the government, these are things that you could do. Of course, as is customary, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, and the Vice President, J.D. Vance, will be seated right behind Mr. Trump. And it should be a much more receptive backdrop than a few years ago. Remember when Nancy Pelosi, when she was Speaker of the House, famously stood up and ripped her copy of the president's speech in half? That will not happen this evening, since it'll have more friendly folks behind him, and the cameras will be on J.D. Vance and Mike Johnson. Democrats, meanwhile, have tapped Senator Elissa Slotkin of Michigan to deliver their response to the de facto State of the Union. Senator Slotkin won Michigan, even though Trump managed to carry the state in the presidential ticket. So she is kind of a rising star in the Democratic Party, generally considered to be more of a moderate Democrat. She has argued that the party has struggled with messaging and did not properly focus on the economy. So you can bet that that will probably be the crux of her speech after the president is done. And then, of course, Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, will also be delivering a separate response aimed at the more progressive faction of the left. Because, as we all know, Senator Bernie Sanders gets grumpy if he's not included. You always... If everybody else is making a speech, then Bernie Sanders has to make a speech too, or else you can't leave him out. And so he gets upset if he's left out, so of course he's got to make a speech as well. I don't know how many of the broadcast networks and such are carrying Bernie Sanders' speech, but there you go. That's the... some of the other things that are happening. By the way, speaking of politics and such, the Pentagon is changing the name of Fort Moore back to Fort Benning, the Fort Army base near Columbus, Georgia, was originally named Fort Benning after Confederate General Henry Benning. Then in 2023, the Pentagon renamed it to Fort Moore after Army Lieutenant General Hal Moore and his wife. That was during the time when they were removing Confederate names from all of the military bases and so on. It was part of that. Now, the Pentagon says the Fort Benning name will return, but not for the Confederate general, but rather to honor Corporal Fred Benning, who is a World War I Army veteran. So, it's Fort Benning, but it's not that Fort Benning. So. And, in other White House news, the White House preparing for the first Easter egg roll of President Trump's second term. We've got Fat Tuesday today, so that means the beginning of Lent and the countdown to Easter. The Easter egg roll is on April 21st, but you can sign up for the online ticket lottery starting today. Tickets are free and are limited to 6 per household with kids 13 and younger. The White House Easter egg roll ticket lottery runs from today until next Monday at recreation.gov. The winners will be notified via email. So, if you are so inclined. A couple of other items among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, since every day we have to have a doom and gloom story. Something that we're worried about, fearful of. Life is coming to an end. Society is doomed story. Here is today's doom and gloom item. It says here, deviations from normal weather patterns are putting several regions of the country at risk for an uptick of disease-spreading pests as winter turns to spring. This is according to a new analysis, a surge in disease-spreading pests, ticks, mosquitoes, cockroaches, and other rodents, is expected in regions that experienced especially warm or wet winters this season, according to the National Pest Management Association's biannual Public Health Pest Index. So, we're going to be inundated with pests this spring. In Cleveland, for example, they say mild, soggy conditions over the winter could allow for pest populations like cockroaches and ticks to flourish as temperatures rise. Other cities at risk include Boston, Denver, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Louisville, Kentucky, New Orleans, Salt Lake City, San Antonio, Seattle. The entire state of Florida is at risk. And Washington, D.C., although one could argue that disease-spreading pests are kind of par for the course in D.C. If you really want to... You really want to think about it. That's, but that is the doom and gloom story. We're all going to die. We're going to be overrun by pests this year because of the wet, mild conditions during the winter. So, okay, just prepare yourself for that. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, speaking to all the dads this morning. If you have a daughter, and you're a girl dad, it appears, according to a recent study from the University of Essex, that father-daughter relationships have improved in the past generation or two since the 1950s. One key factor seems to help the bond between fathers and daughters, and that is exercise. Yes, that's right. Researchers found that going for a walk or a bike ride or going swimming with your daughter have helped emotional bonds between daddies and daughters throughout the years. Women born in the 1950s tended to think their father showed love through financial support, while millennial women described more emotionally balanced relationships. From a father's perspective, according to John Day, the University of Essex, from a father's perspective, physical activity can simultaneously function as a method of upholding a masculine identity while performing one-on-one parenting. So dads feel much more comfortable in this environment. So, and it's good for you. It's good for your daughter. If you want to connect with your little girl, maybe take a walk, go on a bike ride, get some exercise. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, mostly cloudy today with a high in the middle 50s. Showers move in tonight, a low around 50. Ohio students could be spending more time in the classroom as lawmakers are considering a bill to increase the minimum number of hours in the school year.
This new legislation would add 54 hours of instruction time in schools for the year.
For the state to come in and say, we need to do this, kids need to be in the classrooms more, but we're cutting $100 million from the state budget to fund schools, that's really difficult to see those two things come at the same time.
The district would get to decide just how to spread that out over the school year.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Get more in this story on our website. Hancock County Job and Family Services says it and Ohio Means Jobs had to close due to threats made to staff members. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office said a caller upset over canceled benefits threatened to blow the building up. The Sheriff's Office said the caller was from Hancock County and had actually contacted the call center in Sandusky County and didn't specify whether the threat was for Hancock or Sandusky. The Sheriff's Office said it searched the Hancock County Job and Family Services building along with assistance from the Allen County Sheriff's Office K-9 unit for explosive devices, and no threats were found. Get more on our website. The BGSU Marching Band with a fun and exciting opportunity.
The Falcon Marching Band is heading to Ireland to perform in the world-famous St. Patrick's Day Parade. The Falcons are just one of three U.S. college bands that have been selected. This means 300 students, faculty, and staff will make up the self-funded trip to showcase their talent on a global stage, which draws 500,000 spectators each year.
WTOL 11 Steve Iwanek reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Community Foundation has announced the March schedule for its Fun for All series of free community events. Among the March events, Game-a-Palooza at 50 North and Symphony Storytime at the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library. The Community Foundation says it's thankful to its community partners for helping make the events possible. See the full list of March Fun for All events in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, obviously, this is today's cover story. The Findlay formula strikes again for the 11th year in a row. We are America's top micropolitan community as ranked by Site Selection. Economic Development Director Chris Keller is with us now. I know, Chris, we have said this over and over again, that being the top micropolitan community is never the goal in and of itself, but it never gets old.
That is very, very true. It is not the goal in and of itself, but it is a great indicator and measure of the prosperity in Hancock County.
The Findlay formula, as it's become known, is actually so ingrained in our economic development strategy that it is now trademarked. What is it about the Findlay formula that has made it so successful for so many years? What's the secret sauce?
It's all about collaboration and innovation, and it's facilitating discussions with stakeholders, making sure that everyone who has a stake in the game is at the table, and facilitating solutions that are a win-win for everyone.
It's also noteworthy, I think, that this is a formula, philosophy, if you will, that transcends leadership. I mean, from yourself, Dan Schaefer before you, Tim Miley before him, Anthony Iriti before him, everyone kind of brings something unique to the table, obviously, but the results remain the same.
Yeah, it's all about, it's a mindset. It's a mindset that you know that you're coming together and bringing people together to come up with solutions that solve problems and move everyone forward together. So when I started this position, I knew coming in that that's the mindset I needed to have. And my years with the health system helped formulate that collaborative spirit, and mm-hmm. that's what we continue to push forward with.
You kind of zoom out on this year's site selection list, and beyond just Findlay, once again, Ohio does very well overall when it comes to this kind of growth and investment. The Buckeye State far outpaces Georgia as the next highest on the list, and in fact, six of the seven top spots on the top micropolitan cities list are in Ohio. You've got about a half a dozen that are within about 100 miles or so of us. Places like Tiffin, Fremont, Norwalk, Defiance. Do you see those other communities on the list as competitors or as partners in a way in a shared growth? Is it like a rising tide lifts all boats?
I think it's definitely the latter. Rising tide lifts all boats. We are not, you know, we may compete on a project here and there, but for the most part, what this measure indicates is the growth of our existing companies. So that's our primary focus. We're here to support the companies who've already chosen to be here in Hancock County, mm-hmm. Provide resources to those companies to expand and reinvest in those businesses. So that's, you know, for the most part, we're not competing for anything with those other micropolitans.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that all of this year's qualifying projects for the ranking came from companies that are already here, already doing business here. And it seems like that may be a first. Is that the case, that these are all coming from within?
I don't know if that's a first. If you look back at the last 11 years, only 2% of the projects reported were from new companies coming to Hancock County.
Interesting.
So that's a total of about 5 or 6 over those 11 years. So I don't think it's a first. There's been several years where all of the projects reported were reinvestment projects from existing companies.
Yeah, well, and that's good to know, because that was one of the things that immediately jumped out at me in this report, because I'm thinking, does this mean that the market is too saturated for new investments from the outside? I mean, is this where we should expect future growth to come from? But you say, in fact, most of the growth does come from the companies that are already here, and that's always been the case.
Yes, that is true. And if you look at statistics on a regional basis, the growth company or the economic development company for Northwest Ohio called RGP, they would report that 85 to 90% of the investment in Northwest Ohio comes from existing companies as well. So I don't think it's an atypical situation here.
In their write-up on the top micropolitans this year, Site Selection used terms like aggressive and powerhouse to describe what Findlay has become over the past decade plus. How aggressive do you have to be as the competition gets ever tighter for every project? As you mentioned, I mean, you know, when you do have the opportunity to bring in investment from the outside, and as we said, there are a lot of other communities that are also doing very, very well. How aggressive do you have to be in order to land those deals for our community?
I don't know if I would use the word aggressive, but I would say having everything lined up and having all of those stakeholders weighing in when a project or a company expresses interest in our area, making sure you have every aspect that they might need at the table to answer questions, to get their, any sort of obstacles taken care of at that time before they even make a commitment. you know, if that's being aggressive, then call it that. But it's more that collaborative approach that brings interested people here.
Yeah, I was going to say that kind of circles back to what you were talking about, that collaboration. And really, it sounds like it's more common sense than anything.
Yes, it is, actually.
You know, in terms of hard numbers, the past 11 years have seen some $2.5 billion in combined investments, some 9,300 jobs created. Obviously, we would not have gotten to this point without being able to identify and resolve impediments to continued growth and investment. And with that in mind, I'm curious, what do you see as the biggest challenge in maintaining this level of success in 2025 and beyond?
I think, you know, workforce bubbles up to the top. When I have visits with existing companies and ask them about their challenges, that's one of the top things that comes to mind, is how do we retain and continue to develop our workforce? So my office, we're working on some strategies with other stakeholders to call it double down on workforce development. We really want to create a focus there to make sure that you know, the companies who've chosen to invest here are able to, you know, have the staff that they need. So I'd say that's one of the number one. And along with that comes housing opportunities. So we also work on residential housing development as well.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about that, because, again, these are issues that we have talked about in various contexts at different times over the past several months. And it's interesting to see how all of these things are so incredibly intertwined.
Very intertwined. When you think about workforce, it's housing, it's transportation, it's childcare, all of those different factors all play into one's ability to be at a job. So we can't focus just on, you know, certain aspects of what a company needs. It's very broad.
Again, Economic Development Director Chris Keller with us this morning. For the 11th year in a row, Findlay, America's top micropolitan community, is ranked by Site Selection. And it is quite the honor, and here's to many more years. Chris, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So barely 2 months removed from Christmas, and already we're getting our first look at the hottest toys for 2025. The 121st American International Toy Fair wraps up today in New York City. It is the showcase for the U.S. toy industry, largest toy trade show in the Western Hemisphere, and the third largest in the world. And of course, the toy guy, Chris Byrne, is there. He joins us this morning with the inside scoop. Chris, what are the highlights from the toy fair this year?
There are a lot, and I got to tell you, 2025 is going to be a great year to be a kid, because there's so much play going on. First big trend we're going to talk about is characters who are inspiring imagination. Paw Patrol going into its 11th season. This year, they get an airport in Adventure Bay. We've got the Paw Patrol Pup Squad Adventure Bay Airport. It's a place that it's got 7 areas of play. It's about a foot tall, a little over a foot wide, has a chase car, a Mayor Humdinger figure, super way for kids to get involved and express Paw Patrol in their own play. Believe it or not, Hello Kitty is 50 years old, and the Builder system, a BLDR system from Jazzwares, is a 354 construction set that allows kids to create Hello Kitty's Dream Cafe with Hello Kitty, Pom Pom Porin, and Cinema Roll. Collectors know who that is. It's great for collectors as well, about $29.99 from Jazzwares. And you'll never believe who's back. Barney is back in a big way.
Oh, boy.
Fisher-Price Barney's World plush, based on the Max TV show. Really cool. We've got Barney, we've got Baby Bop, we've got Billy Dino, and much more Barney stuff coming later this year. The other big trend is sort of classic play evolved. Who better to do that than Crayola? They first put color in crayons in 1903. This year, they've got the Crayola Color World Arena. These are tops that you put a marker in, pull the ripcord, and they can spin across the wipeable surface, battle with one another as they do. That's about $24.99 coming later this year. And then a car I would have loved as a kid. It's called Flat to Fast Card Racers from Lukey Lab. Imagine a toy sort of squish down like about the size of a playing card, put it in the launcher, push the button, the car pops out, pops up into a full-size toy car, and races away. They're about $7.99. What's new this year are new colors, a new speed car, and a stunt set.
Wow. That is some amazing stuff. I'm curious because, I mean, it's all fun and games. At the end of the day, this is a business, and it is a serious business. And for those who follow business trends across all product categories, we know that shopping patterns, spending habits, and such are changing among consumers. How is that affecting or impacting the toy industry?
Well, it's having a big effect on the toy industry. Of course, we still got the big three, Walmart, Target, Amazon. But what we're seeing more and more of is things like a TikTok shop, which is a way kids can be introduced to things. It's a way for companies to introduce things without having the expense of a big TV campaign. We're seeing a lot more things like GoFundMe, Kickstarter, where people are launching toys but also seeking investment. And then, of course, direct-to-consumer. Companies like Fatbrain, who have always been direct-to-consumer, really leveraging their relationship with the customers. Customers really want a two-way relationship with the companies they buy from right now, and the toy industry is responding.
It's really interesting. That's true not just with respect to toys, but, you know, all product categories. And again, the toy industry, as you said, sort of responding to that. It also says in my notes here something about representative toys as being very big, a big category. What are those, and how soon will we see those on the market?
So those are toys we talk about when we're talking about toys that reflect trends that might not necessarily be entertainment-based, but are sort of product and interaction-based. Okay. We all know that slime is a really big trend, and you may know that teen and tween girls are totally into Sephora. Sephora and the Sephora kid thing we've been talking about. So what happens if you put slime and that together? Well, if you do that, you get gooey gooey from Moose Toys. And this is slime that comes in packages that look exactly like you would get them off the shelf at Sephora, cosmetic packages. They've got different colors, different scents, different textures. Kids love playing with them. They can't take them away from the Moose Toys booth here. They're having too much fun.
As we mentioned, we think of toys and, you know, our thoughts immediately go to Christmas. That's a big time for toy sales and to be talking about toys. And obviously companies throughout the year are thinking about that fourth quarter and all of that. How high are the stakes for the toy industry today?
Well, it's always been a high stakes industry. I always say, you know, if you want something a little less risky, why don't you try writing movies? Because it's always risky to be in the toy industry. You're dependent on the whims of a seven-year-old. What other business really does that? But the economic issue where we're a little more concerned about today, a little bit concerned about, is what's going to happen with the tariffs and what is that going to mean for consumers, consumer prices, the ability to ship things in, and for companies to be profitable. So we're really taking a wait and see. The one thing I'll tell you from studying more than 100 years of the toy industry is no matter what the economic conditions are, the toy industry has responded and ultimately thrived even in the face of challenges.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, with respect to the challenges, the headwinds, the unknowns, as you were mentioning, and there are plenty of them, is this, do the companies, and, you know, you've been there for the past several days through the toy fair, do you get the sense that this is kind of, we're going into a more challenging year than most, or is it kind of a roll with the punches kind of a mindset?
It's kind of a mix of both. I mean, the toy industry always rolls with the punches, but the challenge is if, for example, from a business standpoint, if you've set your pricing, assuming the tariffs might be at a certain level, if suddenly they're higher, you have to go back and refigure everything. You've already made your contracts with the manufacturers. You've already done a lot of things. Yeah. So who is going to absorb that increased cost? So that's the challenge, and people are going to just have to figure out their way through it.
Mm. Again, the toy guy, Chris Byrne, is with us from the 121st American International Toy Fair in New York City. Where do folks get more information about some of these trends and some of these hot toys that are coming for 2025?
You can follow me on Instagram at The Toy Guy. We're posting pictures from the show, but we also, thetoyguy.com, we have different articles and suggestions for toys for different kids throughout the year.
Chris, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Certainly my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, we talked about this a couple, 3 weeks ago on the program or so, and now it has arrived. This is Green Career Week. And for the nonprofit group Seed Your Future, it's about raising awareness of occupations and opportunities that might otherwise go overlooked in the field of horticulture. And you think Green Career Week, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, green energy, green renewable energy, environmentally saving the planet and all of that. And certainly that is a component of it. However, it's more than that. And back in mid-February, we spoke with Jasmine Alboron, executive director of the group Seed Your Future, in case you missed it on the program. What would be some examples of a green career in this context?
On our website, there is a list of 147 different career profiles.
Wow.
And that's not even all the careers that you can have in the industry. Some examples can be ranging from agricultural engineer to biochemist, drone technician, soil specialist, floral designer, plant pathologist, and again, the list goes on, but there is a wide range of careers working directly with the plants, but then there is, you could be a business owner, and all of these careers within technology, within sustainability, it's endless.
Not just a fast-growing employment sector globally, one that also intersects with a number of other career fields like technology, business, logistics, so on and so forth, probably some that maybe people haven't even considered before.
Oh, 100%. Most people, when they hear the word horticulture, they think of a hobby. They think of gardening.
Right.
They think of the person cutting your lawn or the farmer in overalls with the pitchfork and, from the 1920s. And
right.
That's not farming anymore.
Similarly, when you hear Green Career Week, you think, alternative energy and saving the planet and all that, which, again, it could be that or it could be being a florist.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we talk about career opportunities in the context of Green Career Week, but more broadly, the mission of Seed Your Future is about more than just promoting this as a career field. From your website, I saw this, and I thought it was interesting. The next generation is losing touch with the plants growing all around them. We can't let their connection with nature slip away. Talk a little bit about some of the other programs that you support to kind of strengthen that connection. It may or may not be about steering young people to this as a career per se.
Absolutely. So just think about when you and I were younger, you spent the majority of your day in the summer outside playing, running around, right? Being in nature.
Right.
But now students' summers and evenings are packed with going to different activities, different camps, and their cell phones. So the generations have changed, and so we want to remind them that nature is still here. It's good for you, right? It's good for your mental, physical, and emotional health. And if you love and see that you find yourself enjoying being outdoors, there are all these kind of jobs that you can do within the industry. So we have a variety of resources to help build that awareness and those connections to industry. One, we have a new webinar series that is connecting students directly to hearing from young professionals within the horticulture industry. So it's like a short panel discussion, young people sharing how they got to their plant job and what does it look like. The second thing that we have for educators is we now have 25 career exploration lessons on the website that connect a high school science module to a horticulture career.
We mentioned the website, which has all of that information, again, for both those who have an interest in horticulture as a career opportunity. Maybe their interest has been piqued in that way. Or, like we said, those programs that are aimed at just building that love of plants and horticulture in general, maybe even just as a hobby. Where can folks find those resources? And again, for kids, for parents, and for educators.
Absolutely. So visit our website, seedyourfuture.org. If you go to resources, then whether you're a student, a parent, or an educator, find your tab and you'll have information just for you. And then you can also go to Our Work, second tab down. That's where you'll find the information for Green Career Week. And all the way at the bottom of that same tab, you will see Seed to STEM. That's an educator program that we have. We bring teachers from across the country to one central location. This year, we're going to be in Chicago, and we give the teachers a tours of different horticulture businesses so they can see the difference between ornamental hort, the floral, turf, any plant protection. And then the teachers will create a lesson to connect those students with these wonderful careers within the industry. Last year, we focused on science teachers. Those 25 lessons that I mentioned earlier were created by those teachers. This year, we're going to bring math, English, and art teachers together. We want educators to know that regardless of what they are teaching, they can prepare students for a career in this industry because there are that many careers to have.
Again, part of our conversation with Jasmine Alboron, Executive Director of the group Seed Your Future for Green Career Week this week. If you want to learn more, we've got the link to Seed Your Future posted and their Green Career Week section of their website posted at our webpage, goodmornings.net. And if you want to hear a complete conversation with Ms. Alboron from Seed Your Future, we originally had her on the program a couple, 3 weeks ago, back February 12th, to be specific. So you can go to the Good Mornings podcast edition and the archive, go back to the 12th of February for the full conversation. Again, goodmornings.net to learn more in case you missed it from a couple of weeks ago on the program.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
So, you've ever been to the movies anytime recently, you can probably commiserate with this. It's actually a story out of India from the International File, leading off the broken news. A man named M.R. Abhishek sued a movie theater for showing too many ads before the feature began. Mr. Abhishek said the film that he went to see back in December of 2023, when this dates back to, the movie was supposed to end at 6:30 p.m., but actually ended at 7, a half hour later than advertised because of the number of ads that was shown before the start of the movie. And he claimed this caused him to miss an important work call. And so he sued for $547 in damages and $57 for mental anguish. The court actually ruled in his favor, and while he did not receive the full amount he had asked for, he was awarded $230 in damages and $92 for legal costs. He actually successfully sued the movie theater because they showed too many ads at the beginning of the movie. 25 to 30 minutes is a considerable amount of time to sit idle in the theater and watch unnecessary ads. According to the court, people with tight schedules do not have time to waste. I'm just thinking, could you imagine if that were in this country? I mean, suing for $547 in damages and $57 for mental anguish. You can add several zeros to the end of that in this country. Maybe suing for $57 million instead of just $57. But he won, you know, about $200 in compensation. And too many ads before. Again, if you've been to the theater recently, you can probably commiserate with that. I don't know in this country whether you would win a lawsuit like that, but you never know. Elsewhere in the broken news, a Seattle parking enforcement officer stumbled across quite a find. I don't know how many days ago this was. I know the original crime happened on Saturday that this parking enforcement officer uncovered. So within the past couple of days, officer found a stolen replica of the Liberty Bell. Apparently it had been stolen from the Evergreen Washeli Cemetery on Saturday. Who would steal a replica of the Liberty Bell from a cemetery in Seattle? What in the world are you gonna do with that? Apparently nothing, because they abandoned it. It's estimated to be worth around $100,000, but apparently the thieves, once they stole it, they were probably attracted by the value of it, and then once they stole it, they realized you really can't do anything with a stolen Liberty Bell. What are your options there? The parking enforcement officer spotted a detached flatbed trailer with a tarp covering something large. He looked under the top tarp, and that's when he spotted the bell. He informed other officers, who confirmed with cemetery staff that it was, in fact, their stolen Liberty Bell. Apparently, it is very rare. There are only 20 replica Liberty Bells in the world. And now the Evergreen Washeli Cemetery in Seattle has theirs back. So no word on whether they have actually caught the thief or thieves, the Liberty Bell. Just an unusual thing to steal, you know? But fortunately, it is now back where it belongs. Let's see. A couple of other items here. Three people are now facing charges for allegedly smuggling drugs into the Bird Detention Center in Marietta, Georgia. when will they learn? When will they learn? Apparently, authorities say Nicole Gall and Jamie Garcia are facing charges of conspiracy and drug trafficking. The third individual, Juan Brasino, was actually already an inmate, already in custody, now faces additional charges of possession and identity theft in the scheme. Deputies reportedly seized fentanyl and methamphetamine during a routine investigation as Ms. Gall and Mr. Garcia visited the jail, and now they get a permanent stay. They get to stay a while. They get to stay a while rather than just visiting. So, trying to smuggle drugs into them. Like they're not going to check for these things. Anyway. is not going to be Dad of the Year. In Eau Claire, Wisconsin, State Patrol trooper pulled over David M. Young for speeding on Saturday and determined he was driving under the influence as well. He was also in possession of assorted drug paraphernalia and two children, one who was 4 years old, the other a one-year-old, in the car as well. Fortunately, the kids are safe. They have been turned over to their mom, Mr. Young, taken into custody, and he is now officially out of the running for Dad of the Year. Wow. Wow. And finally, in the broken news this morning, odd and unusual side of the headlines. You ever played Pin the Tail on the Donkey when you were a kid? Apparently, you know, it's a... nothing wrong with the game, but if you try and pull the tail on the horse, that's not a good game, and that can get you into trouble. One woman apparently decided to try that at California's Ocean View Stables and found out why you really shouldn't pull a horse's tail. According to a social media post by Ocean View Stables, family was taking their children on a pony ride when the horse carrying one of the kids got spooked, causing the child to fall. Now, fortunately, the child was not seriously injured, but upon reviewing the footage that the family shot of the incident, I mean, they're, you know, kids are on the horse, they're going to take a video of that. And so they looked at the video, to see what happened, and employees discovered that a woman had pulled the horse's tail, which understandably freaked the animal out. It bucked and threw the child off. Ocean View Stables has filed a police report, and the woman who pulled the horse's tail has been arrested. What would possess you to do something like that with a kid on the back of the horse? What in the world? Man, there you go. That is today's Broken News Report. Odd and unusual side of the headlines. It is that indeed. This morning's collection of broken news, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Take WFIN wherever you go with our updated mobile app for iPhone and Android. And now you can listen to us on your Alexa device. Get the app at WFIN.com or in the App Store or Google Play. Plus, enable Alexa by searching for WFIN under skills, and you'll soon be saying, "Alexa, play 1330 WFIN." And the best part is the apps and skills are absolutely free. On the air at 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM. Online at WFIN.com and on your smartphone, tablet, and Alexa devices.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Here we are in the month of March, and for most of us, this is the heart of tax season. It is the month of March when most folks will file. Some have filed early, obviously. Some will wait until the very last minute. But March is generally the big month for tax season. And over half of Americans, according to a new survey, Talker Research, polled 2,000 adults. It was a survey commissioned by the financial platform Chime. And in this survey, 54% of Americans, to be exact, have filing fear during the tax season. Filing fear. Some feel more anxiety than others, obviously. And it turns out your zodiac sign may or may not have something to do with that. But it is kind of interesting when you break it down by your astrological sign. 19% of Tauruses have that filing fear, compared to just 10% for those under the Aries sun sign. I don't know why, but that's what they found. 19% of Tauruses. Well, it could be because 16% of those Tauruses say that they have previously owed money to the IRS that they couldn't pay. Well, that would certainly do it. I'll give you a filing fear. To be sure, 19% of Scorpios admit to accidentally filing incorrectly. 15% of Libras wait until the very last second to file. Aries, I'll tell you what, they are really chill about this. Not only do they have very little filing fear, Aries also the most likely to wait until April at 19%. But Aries are most likely to stick to the timeline that they had planned at the beginning of tax season. 71% will stick to that initial plan of filing when they figure they'll file at the beginning of tax season. They stick to the plan. Scorpios, on the other hand, were the biggest procrastinators. 58% will wait to the last minute. Tauruses, again, here are your Tauruses. They have that filing fear. Tauruses are the most likely to flat-out forget to file in the first place. And you may ask yourself, how do you forget to file? It is possible. I actually did that many years ago, back before electronic filing, when you had to print out the forms and fill them out and mail them in. I did that one time. I filled out the forms, I put them in the envelope, put the stamp on it, put it in the car, and then the last minute, I realized I had not mailed it yet. And so it's like April 15th coming up to like 5 o'clock when the post office closes. I'm running around trying to find a post office that's still open that I can mail my tax return. It is possible to forget, flat out forget to file. And Taurus is most likely to do that. Capricorns, on the other hand, are the most likely to file earlier than planned. 23% get ahead of the game. 24% of Geminis file so early that they can use their refund for their spring break travel. So that is early. 62% of Cancers will file early just to get it over with, is what they say. 46% of Leos will file fast because they need their returns for other expenses. Sagittarius and Aquarius are most likely to feel anxiety about their return after they file. 19% fall into that category. More than half of all respondents, 51%, agree that the longer you wait to file your taxes, the more stressed you become. The good news is that in 2025, another 55% of habitually late filers are planning to break the cycle and avoid filing their taxes late. Time to find out what's happening. The Findlay YMCA, Jerry McNamee is with us in the studio this morning. And as we were talking a little bit before we came on here, it's about time to get back outdoors. That's always fun.
It is. It's time for the YMCA and the community to get back outside. Yeah. So actually, this week we started lining soccer fields out at Emory Adams.
Yep.
So I know there's snow coming on Thursday potentially, but we got to get white lines down on dead grass. Looking forward to that. So the soccer will start up, and then we have a spring flag football league that also registration's going on for right now.
Okay.
That takes place at the University of Findlay out on Armstrong. So with the springtime, it's nice to have that turf option of saying like we don't have to worry about mud because it's just going to be that way.
Yeah.
So out there, but those registrations are going on. Now they end on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th.
Okay, so this is open to all.
Open to all. So. Open to all. There is a price difference for members versus non-members, and our memberships, youth memberships, start at the age of 10, which is so it doesn't have to be the whole family. We'd love it to be the whole family, but if you have a child just participating in sports, it's over the age of 10. You can get that membership rate.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's involved in signing our kids up for these spring sports?
It's actually pretty easy. You can either come into either branch out at the East Branch up on Manor Hill Road. You can come downtown. With the construction, you just kind of find a little parking there with our new Early Learning Center being built right now, which is a great thing. But you can come down, you can register in person, or if you're like me, you can also just get online at findlayymca.org and register online.
Okay.
Pretty quick, pretty easy. And if there's any kind of complications with that, by all means, just give us a call.
So, as you mentioned, the registration deadline is March 17th,
yeah.
the St. Patrick's Day, so it should be easy to remember. When do the seasons run?
So, this year, we're going to start the week just prior to Easter, so it's just a little bit there around that spring break. We'll start that week, but then we're going to go all the way up until Memorial Day. So, each session or season is roughly 7 to 8 weeks, depending on what's going to happen. So, a lot of activity, but... a balanceable schedule, so it's not five nights of practice or four nights of practice,
right.
And you know, going to a game or a tournament every Friday through Sunday. Mm-hmm. So we try and get seven games in. Most of our stuff is two practices a week and a game on Saturday.
Yeah,
and all very localized.
So
the furthest you may travel is Upper Sandusky. You might go to Bluffton. But other than that, for our little kids, if we say we're at Armstrong or Emory Adams, that's where your practice is at. It's where your games are at.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very nice. And then we may go to Van Buren, may go out to Benton Ridge. But once again, very localized travel. So we're not heading to Cincinnati. We're not heading to Dayton.
Exactly. The idea is making this accessible for everyone.
Everybody. And part of the accessibility that we have is we do have a scholarship program called Open Doors. So financial barriers, you can apply for that. That's available on our website as well. We'll remove financial barriers. And that goes for all our programming. And looking forward to the summertime, that includes our day camp, which registration just started this last Monday. So that's open, and we offer a wide variety of day camps from preschool camps for ages 3 to 5 year olds. We have our discovery camps that happen over at our Child Development Center, which is great. They're really kind of focused in on the learning, the STEM, and that kind of stuff, kind of that to stop that summer loss gap.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our traditional day camp, which is what people might remember from growing up, but that's we're outside all day. You're gonna get sunburned, you're gonna get bit by mosquitoes. You're gonna swim a lot.
It wouldn't be camp unless you got a little sun, you got to
and a little dodgeball. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And so there are kids that they don't want to be outside, and that's great. And so we offer this discovery camp where they get to be a little bit inside more.
Right.
And then we have our traditional camp that you're going to be outside all day.
Yeah.
And so it works out really well. And then that registration's going on. And then, believe it or not, I know it's a sheet of ice right now, but Riverside Pool, we start getting that ready. Our Riverside Pool passes will be on sale by the end of the month. And along with that, getting ready to open that pool, we also are offering a ton of lifeguarding certification classes. So those kids who are 15, 16, 17 years old that are looking for their first job, being a lifeguard or a swim instructor is a fantastic way to start. It's a great first job. We'll help you get certified. And then we'd love for you to stay at the Y, and we have some opportunities for people to stay at the Y. But that certification goes with the person. So once again, working with the village of like Cary or Macomb or that kind of stuff, we'll certify people. You can come get your certification. That doesn't mean you have to work for us. We would love that. But we go back out to Macomb.
Yeah, there are other pools.
There's other pools that you can go to.
Also need lifeguards, yeah. And again, can folks sign up for all of that online?
All of that is available online at finleyymca.org. And again, come in. Any of us will be able to help you, especially for some of our members or our community members that are just looking for that one specific thing, that lifeguard class or that kind of stuff, because there's some setup to it. It's just like setting up a profile for Amazon.
Right.
It's pretty easy, but at the same time, if you get hung up, there's still a personal voice you can call, and we can get you through everything.
You mentioned the camps, and I know we were talking about this with the folks of the Park District just a week or so ago. Those, I'm sure, will fill up quickly.
They fill up quickly, but so, the more that we are able to register, because we try and do it out ahead of time, the more that if people register early, we can adapt to it, and we can hire more people to clear that.
Okay.
So I always urge people to register in advance. We run a deposit system, so you don't have to pay for the whole program up front. So you put $50 down as a deposit, and then we'll automatically bill you 2 weeks out from the start of when the session begins.
Okay.
So it's not so taxing on parents where you're like, well, this is going to cost us a few $1,000s over the course of the summer.
Right.
But the more people that register, we still have time right now to react to that. So please register early and often for the session so that we don't have to waitlist anybody, because all of a sudden, if you're in June and we're trying to get all these kids in,
right,
we have our regulations by the state that we have to adhere to.
Right, right.
So if you register now, we can adapt and we can just hire more people.
Okay.
So please register early.
Now is the time to get that done. And more information on the website on all of that.
More information on the website. And then, again, come down and visit us at 300 East Lincoln Street, and we'll be there. Our front desk and are fantastic, and they'll be able to help you through that. And then all our directors as well will be able to. We got a lot going on at the Y with construction, with programming. It's going to be a tremendous summer. And then the other thing that we have is our free. It's called our Y on the Fly, and we go out to area communities and we support other agencies with activities. Last year, and that schedule will be posted, but like last year, every Thursday, we were out at Benton Ridge Park, and it was free to the community from like 2 to 4 o'clock, just free. We come out there, we do activities with kids, tremendous support from the Community Foundation and our other sponsors that help us facilitate that program to once again bring the Y out and get us out of the building and bring our programming to kids. But once again, that's all free, and that schedule will be posted as well.
Ultimate goal is to get the kids out and active and
involved. To have that summer away from screens and to get a little sunburn and to get some mosquito bites and some scars that you can tell stories about later on in life.
Amen. We've got a link for more information on all of this. There are a couple of upcoming events in the month of March. To mention, the March Book and Cook is coming up here in about a week and a half.
It is. That is focused. How to Catch a Leprechaun.
Yeah.
And Miss Christie does a fantastic job. That's a great program. You read a book, and then we teach you some basic cooking skills to go along, age appropriate,
to
go along with the story.
It's a lot of fun.
It is.
And then the next day on March 14th, there's a stuffy overnight.
That is amazing. So the children come, bring their stuffy. The kids don't stay at night. The stuffies do.
And they have an adventure.
They have an adventure, and the kids and the families get updates throughout the course of the night of pictures of what their stuffy is up to. So last year the stuffies went swimming. They were hanging out in the whirlpool. They were playing basketball.
That's awesome.
There was one that was lifting weights. We had to ask him to leave because he wasn't old enough to be in the weight room, but it's a great time. So the kids get continuous updates, and then in the morning when they come pick their stuffy up, there's some surprises for them as well.
There we go. So again, more information at the YMCA website. We have it linked up at our webpage, goodmornings.net. Jerry McNamee, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Always great, Chris. Thank you.
And with that, we'll finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And reminder, you can get more information about all the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show by checking out our website. Visit us online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, University of Findlay President Dr. Catherine Fell will join us to talk about the decision to abandon the planned merger with Bluffton University and what happens now given the process was already well underway. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.